Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport. It is the outdoor version of those studios today here at lovely Bryn Mawr Country Club, live from Joe Madden's third annual Try Not to Suck golf outing. We're in Lincolnwood, and we're hanging out with you today as we're going to enjoy all kinds of special guests and just revel in a memorable sports day yesterday. Just, it's, if you are a sports fan, you had to know that when watching the golf tournament and watching how many great players, the return of Tiger Woods, remembering what it's like, what everything looks like and feels like, the size of an event when he's good, and then into that Cub game and Scherzer grunting and screaming and throwing just filth up there, and the ending, man, what more do you want?
The storylines were great, Dan, and the way we got there too, whether it's Tiger missing every single fairway on the front
the
nine.
The front nine was ridiculous.
Or David Bodie coming in off the bench for a pinch hit, falling behind Scherzer. I mean, the drama was stirred up on the way to these fantastic endings. It was quite a day yesterday.
The fact that we didn't make David Bodie bad. The fact he's survived his,
yes.
Not only survived, he's, you know, thriving after his appearance on this show. So he's going to join us again today. We're just going to check in with our guy.
Why not?
At 10:20
and double up.
And you get microphones here for people. So you're not going to want to miss a minute because you never know who's going to show up and hang out. But we expect Joe Madden to say hi. We expect Jim Deshays to stop by. We've got a whole lot to do here on Sports Radio 670. And this broadcast brought to you in part by Not Standard Custom Suits and Menswear and St. Jane Hotel at 230 North Michigan Avenue. You can find more information on them at stjanehotel.com. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR The Score. You can email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We're streaming at 670thescore.com. Texting at 67011. You text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Make sure you download the radio.com app to stream The Score on your mobile devices, because that's where you do it now. It is just the new, reimagined, updated radio.com app. They have made it better than it was for your listening experience. So do that. Twitter at Bernstein underscore MCK. He is at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan underscore Bernstein. We are also on Facebook, so you can interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. The cameras are here. There's two cameras. One facing out and one facing. So I guess they're going to actually get shots of the people teeing off, all the celebs whacking golf balls down there to that. It looks like a pretty forgiving first fairway.
Yeah, it's a par 5. Looks like about 470 off the greens. Pretty straightforward. Bunkers on the left, trees on the right. It looks like it's got a bunker on the right-hand side, and the greens kind of tucked off to your left.
That's for the big hitters. That's
so, yeah, you want to watch that sand trap on the right-hand side with your first one if you've got the big stick. If you don't, you're taking, you know, something probably like a driver and then 3-iron in, because you got to make the turn to get into that green.
I don't have a 3-iron, so I will not be hitting 3-iron in.
Well,
because
then you should not play the greens here.
My 3-iron remains in the garage because I don't like it and it doesn't like me.
I've always loved my 3-iron, but I had to play it for the better part of 15 years because I didn't have a driver.
Same relationship with my 3-iron as I have with house cats. I
hiss at you.
I don't like it. It doesn't like me, and we just simply leave it at that.
Get up close to it in the garage, and it hisses at you like a Horcrux or something.
That video feed is available at watch670thescore.com and at Facebook Live. It's directed by Brian Gertsch. Our engineer is Dan Hibbets. The executive producer is Jay Zawoski.
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
When is Big Al on the podcast, fellas? When? Hero. Hero is Big Al.
Dingers.
You seen this kid? I don't know how he gets the rat. Big kid. It's a big kid. It's a big kid.
He's a P1 of the podcast. Dingers. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So is he like a Danny Vogelbach type figure?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, he is. That man has first base / DH when he came out the crib. I mean, that was something else. And he hits dingers.
You're like deep into the forest.
Dingers.
Listen to his voice. He's got that raspy kind of...
He sounds like a hitman.
He does. You know? Does he say my teammates call me Big Al too? Is that how it goes? My teammates call me Big Al.
At home they call me Big Al.
At home.
At home.
At home they call me
like
Big Al.
Like wandering around the house. Big Al.
Hey, dinner time, Big Al.
Yeah, I knew. But they got a can of peas, red peppers and the sausage.
Back at the Score Studios, Rick Camp.
Jason Hayward now 0 for 2 with the strikeout and a fly to right. There was one.
Here you go, Max.
That helps.
And Jason left his knuckles at the plate for that.
That was Max Scherzer.
Who said way to go, Max?
I don't know who said way to go, Max, but he sounded like he was in a booth with A-Rod and Matt Vasgersian.
Yeah.
Here you go, Max.
Yeah, but Scherzer's like, it's like a women's tennis player.
It's A-Rod off mic letting you know that everything's cool with him and Joe Maddon.
Going out. Oh! That's a pitcher screaming as he throws a pitch.
So, I did some work with the White Sox the last 2 years, and James Shields would do that a lot. He'd grunt, mm-hmm. but he'd grunt when he threw a breaking ball. It was like the counter magic. You know what I mean? It was like a fake. It was like a bluff. It was like,
look how hard I'm throwing this.
74 tumbling off the table.
Yeah. His neck snaps back as he watches it hit 450 feet.
Crafty right-hander.
You should keep grunting because you suck. Also in the back, doing what the executioner usually does, is Eli Hershkovich.
I'm told we're going down to Chuck Garfine for a surprise of some kind.
Yeah, I'm here with Charlie. Charlie, you were in the 73-72 White Sox uniform, or at least jersey.
Yes, that's right.
Can you just turn around and show everyone who you're wearing here? Look at this.
Oh, my.
Look at this. Steve Stone, ladies and gentlemen, a Steve Stone throwback. Why did you decide to honor the legendary Steve Stone?
They were all out of the Dick Allen jerseys.
Got any question for Charlie, Steve, or no?
Yeah, what did that Dick Allen jersey cost?
What did the Dick Allen jersey cost?
It was double, but it was worth it. It was Dick Allen.
Dick Allen, but this is Steve Stone.
It was only double.
Benetti had to just be loving that.
Stone out for a ride all afternoon. That's so great.
That's awesome.
Trolling his ass.
Really.
I will say I admit my White Sox consumption over the weekend involved pretty much Adam Engel video.
My God. The kid just plays defense. I tweeted this out when he made the first one, and I said, listen, I understand. Save for me your Adam Engel can't hit hot takes, all right? We all understand that the guy has trouble staying offensively in the major leagues. I hope the guy's a great kid. I love talking with him. Hitting's been a challenge for him, but he plays defense.
Yeah.
Outs above average, he's like fourth in Major League Baseball when I checked on Friday before we did the show. He has catches that look like Byron Buxton catches. He has catches that look, I mean, the guy.
That's a measurable, marketable skill.
To get three like that in a homestand, in a weekend, it's remarkable. And the third one might have been the best one of the whole bunch. Unreal.
The texters are already out and busy. The 773 saying that Big Al sounds like John Fox. I'd have to hear it again, but yeah, if I'm picturing John Fox, it was his typical postgame.
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
There was something about John Fox, though, where like his first comments after a game were always like he had just left the grave. You know, there was something resigned about it. Whereas Big Al seems excited to go hit dingers for his team and for the folks back home. Fox was like, you're all dead. It's all over. something kind of resigned about John Fox.
And the 630 says, regarding the Scherzer grunt, I remember Mike Schmidt being asked about Nolan Ryan's grunt. And he said, if you get that grunt, it's too late.
It's over.
Yeah, I don't know but Ryan didn't do it as a bluff. Ryan did it because he was reaching back. He had, you know, that high leg kick.
I don't think there was anything voluntary about that grunt from Nolan Ryan. That was all just part of it. It was very, very ingrained, I think, into Nolan Ryan.
But man, that the David Bodie game will remember where we were, especially too. And I was thinking about this, that as we were watching the PGA yesterday, were you following at all, like maybe have MLB.com open and was following what was going on with the Brewers and the Braves?
Yeah, I was flipping through and actually went out to go grab a second cup of coffee that afternoon as Jesus Aguilar dropped one deep into right field. That dude taking that three-run shot opposite way, that is a strong, strong man.
Yep.
But yeah, I'd followed it a little bit.
Because you saw Corey Knebel's been bad.
Yes.
And they decided to do like a little Andrew Miller high leverage early moment. And what was it, back-to-back doubles that he gives up? This is after Soria gave
back-to-back?
Up.
Back-to-back? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, Soria gave up the booty the other night, and not the Bodie. And he ends up going on the DL. And you know the pain, not just for a Nats fan, but if you're a Milwaukee fan, now you got St. Louis breathing down your neck.
Yeah, how about that?
They're starting to play.
Come on.
Yeah, they move Tommy Pham. When you get the idiot out of the dugout, it changes things.
And let's be clear here. That's not Tommy Pham.
No. People know I mean Mike Matheny.
People know you mean Mike Matheny.
It's the fact that you had him there for so long.
I just like the chance to say it again and again. Mike Matheny's the idiot who's now out of the dugout. Yeah, I think that helps. And you've gotten some decent production from a couple other pieces, too. I mean, there's been a bit of a step up from a few places.
But the pain for a Milwaukee fan to have that happen last night, and all of a sudden you've extended your lead to, what, three? And is it five in the loss column now?
It is. I was just looking it up. It is five in the loss column. 49 for the Cubs, 54 for the Milwaukee Brewers. So that makes five. Mm-hmm. And for the Nationals, too, they fall 5.5 games behind the Atlanta Braves after this one. I got a text from a national politics reporter, a guy who does it real well for NPR. He's a Yankee fan, but also a Nats fan, you know, because when you relocate and start reporting on politics, you have to become a D.C. fan, a Nationals fan. Otherwise, you're excoriated or excommunicated from the city or something like that.
Is that the other rule about people in our business also have to be over-the-top Bruce Springsteen fans?
I think it's a corollary, because actually, now that you mention it, this guy is a giant Bruce Springsteen fan.
It's just a memo at some point that I accidentally deleted. I missed that one. I didn't get the group text when we were told that you can't be a white American sportscaster or
baseball
sports
writer specifically
without adoring Bruce Springsteen.
Your membership to the BBWAA comes with a Bruce Springsteen, like backstage passes to Bruce Springsteen, just in case you haven't been in there yet.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people who's completely fine with Bruce Springsteen.
I'd put myself a notch above completely fine, but I'm certainly not I don't adore the man. I don't celebrate his entire catalog.
Like, yes, Springsteen, Bruce.
No, but the politics reporter who texted me was like, be tuning in today to find out just how much of a ball punch that was for the Nationals.
It was that when you look at that win expectancy.
We were talking Friday and trying to measure the relative, because you'd seen these Nationals and I don't blame you at all, as much more on the come as I had. I had kind of seen the disjointed Nationals, hadn't gotten past that yet, and maybe it's because I hadn't looked at Bryce Harper's overall numbers since the All-Star break, because he's been crushing. But that is tough. That is very tough. And just like every win, just like every loss like that, it's all up to your next day's starting pitcher. That's all it
is. Momentum is tomorrow's starting pitcher.
That's all it is. Vin has never rung so true. That's what this is. And for those who say, you know, this is, you know, something of a springboard or something that takes them off, or you're looking for a second half as always, well, if that rotation starts to click some, yeah, you'll see something from the Cubs, because they've played defense and they've put together enough offense all year. What a night for Cole Hamels, too. I mean, as fun as it was to watch David Bodie, Cole Hamels' Wrigley Field Cubs debut, that was needed and necessary.
This front office was due for a good call on a starting pitcher.
Yeah, it was.
Right?
It took an offer into August. Yeah, you're not wrong.
It's still ugly. And the Lester thing, you know, you don't want to say I told you so, but people who have been paying attention to the Bernstein and McKnight show know that since pre-All-Star break, since right around
about, I want to say 2 weeks before, two starts, three starts before All-Star break.
Before All-Star break, we were explaining that, the peripherals were a little scary, and that he was pitching through some really good luck and some really hard contact with not enough strikeouts, not enough swing and miss, not enough velocity, and then I don't care about those nerds. And I understand no one's asking John Lester to necessarily care about that stuff.
Not.
But it doesn't mean it isn't real.
Right. And I think, too, even in those three starts, I'd kind of pushed back a little bit against some of the peripherals. Pushback's maybe the wrong term. But just pointed out, like, he is
mitigated
giving
it.
up.
Yeah,
yeah mit- he had pitched with real good command. And I think something that Jess Mendoza pointed out last night on the broadcast while Max Scherzer was throwing is Scherzer has the, because of the stuff and the way he's throwing, because of that command that he walks up there with and the swagger he walks up there with, he gets to miss middle and still get swings and misses. Not just weak contact, not just, you know, a couple of calls, not a little hesitant. You get swings and misses if you're Max Scherzer and you miss middle because of everything else that you've done up to that point.
It's
because
just
of the at-bats you had
filthy.
Before.
It's when you see his elbow, I always said this about the still photos of Chris Sale.
Inverted W?
Well,
it's an M.
To me, always the Chris Sale photo, it hurts to look at.
Yeah.
Because you can see the tension on the ulnar collateral ligament.
He's so skinny, you can see the ulnar collateral ligament.
Yes, same thing with Scherzer. Yeah. When you look at the super slow-mo and you look at the torque that he's getting from that weird three-quarter short arm release. Ooh.
I guess to that end, you see the difference in having swing and miss and not... John Lester doesn't get to miss in the places that Max Scherzer does and did last night, despite the fact that David Bodie put the exclamation point on the evening.
Scoreboard update.
From the Northwestern Football Update studio, I'm Joe Ostrowski. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season and single game tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. David Bodie played hero with a ninth inning grand slam, and Cole Hamels has an ERA of 1 and 3 starts with the Cubs.
It's now being able to see that and getting the results. That's how you build momentum. That's how you get back to what I know I'm capable of doing, and it's going out there and helping a team win ballgames.
Hamels allowed one run and one hit, a single last night. The Cubs took 2 of 3 from the Nats. They now lead the Central by 3 games. The Northsiders welcome in Milwaukee for 2 starting tomorrow. Dylan Covey was pulled in the 3rd inning of the Sox 9-7 loss to the Tribe. Adam Engel, a double shy of a cycle, and he robbed another home run. Sox at the Tigers tonight. Brooks Koepka won the 100th PGA Championship, his 2nd major of the year. Koepka beat Tiger by 2 shots, and the Bears head to Denver tomorrow for joint practices. This update was brought to you by Subway. Show them your app and wet your whistle during Free Drink Fridays. Just head to Subway restaurants every Friday and show them your Subway app for your free 21-ounce drink. Limited time only at participating restaurants. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Cubs pregame is presented by BBVA Compass. Tune into the BBVA Compass pregame show tomorrow. Hashtag We Are Mobile. I'm Joe Ostrowski, and you're listening to the radio home for Cubs baseball, 670 The Score. The next game on The Score is tomorrow when the Cubs take on the Brewers. This is 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Cubs will look at Madsen as a one-pitch pitcher. And right now, you just sit fastball because that's 2 times he's hit a Cub with an off-speed delivery.
Madsen sends. He kicks, he delivers. And a swing and a fly ball to deep center. Taylor's going back, way back at the wall. It is gone. Goodbye. It's a walk-off, pinch hit, grand slam, and the Cubs have won the game and won the series. And this is about as demoralizing a finish to a game that I have ever seen for the Nationals. Simply unbelievable.
106.7 The Fan.
It's a little Brockmire in that.
You know what's fascinating?
There's a little Brockmire in that.
And I'm not sure who the analyst is, but... he and Ron Coomer had almost identical analysis of the situation.
I think, and we'll get a chance to talk with Coom at some point. We're out here at the Joe Madden Try Not to Suck charity golf tournament at Bryn Mawr Country Club this morning here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. But I think hitters, especially when you see that kind of weakness, you see that kind of flaw in a guy for that inning, you hop on that. I mean, it's like it's red meat. It's red meat going up there and knowing that you've got 2 pitches now, that you've gone from 2 to 1, really, because he's got the fastball and the two-seamer, I guess. Kind of derivations are the same.
Baseball writer Ronnie Jazierli actually said this last night. He gave this information on Twitter. Said David Bodie hit the golden homer, a walk-off grand slam down 3, and with his team down to his last strike. And he mentions, for all the years we have pitch data, there are just 2 other golden homers. Chris Hoyles in 1996, Alan Trammell in 1988. That is a pretty special thing, and I love that Bodie didn't get cheated on his reaction to it. He could have done the tough baseball guy thing put your head down and that's it. But the fact that he knew it when he hit it, there's so much going on. There's so much. There's the bat. There's the flying arms. There's the helmet toss. And then there's the uniform destruction.
You've seen, yeah, it was just tearing it off, rending of garments, usually reserved for the Nationals who lose that game. You've seen the photo from the right field. It's a right about the right field foul pole, and it's Bodey coming around third, all of his teammates at home.
The Cubs tweeted that
He's
picture.
Got, oh, was it, was yes. it the Cubs feed that yes. did it? That is a terrific photo, just absolutely fantastic. And I'll tell you another thing, too. When Bodey takes that 1-1, the fastball on the outer third that just clips it, and he has the he didn't think it was a strike. He didn't think that was there. And indeed, you know, A-Rod pointed it out in the pitch zone, kind of pitch tracker pointed out to it, just clipped that bottom layer of the strike zone. And to know that that's not something you can do anything with, mm-hmm. even while in the post game, he's talking about they were going down there all series to me. They had ruined me in, what was it, Saturday's game, I think, where he had kind of a rough one and a couple of at-bats where they were hunting him down low and he was unable to do much with it. To know that, like, that's that pitch that is there, but not the one you can do anything with, to take that, that's stone cold, too, especially coming off the bench.
Another note from last night from Baseball Reference yesterday was Max Scherzer's 19th game with 10 or more strikeouts and no runs allowed. That is the eighth most in baseball history.
Whoa.
Think about that. Again, 19th game with 10 strikeouts and zero runs allowed is the eighth most in MLB history. Pretty special.
Yeah.
And by the way, the color guy we heard on 106.7 The Fan, Dave Jagler?
I don't know him.
I don't know him.
I don't catch a lot of Nats radio.
Remember him if he played? I don't remember him. Sorry, Dave.
No, but he seemed to know
it
was coming.
Don't know who you are. But,
you know who else knew? Like, when you heard the call with Pat and Ron when we came back here and when we started the show, Bodie knew it right away. I've got the replay pulled up. Dan, tell me who else knows it right away. Here's the pitch. Look at Matt Wieters, the catcher for the Nationals.
He wanted to run away.
It's like he was struck with something. It's that moment where a catcher knows exactly what just happened. Madsen throws this thing, and Wieters just, he can't stand it.
Yeah, he gave like, it's almost like an ouch.
Can't stand it.
He couldn't look. And then airplane arms at first, and Bodie goes flying away. As significant, as memorable, as special as that was to cap off the day of sports viewership, it was only by a little bit the most significant plate appearance of the Cubs weekend. Because there was another one in there that really mattered.
You're telling me that a .9 win probability added at bat was only by a little the most important at bat of the weekend?
Plate appearance. I didn't say at bat.
Interesting.
So keep that in mind. That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. I'll explain in a moment on The Score.
Saying something, when you win ball games here, I mean, this place is electric. It's you know, this clubhouse has been, you know, outstanding, and the energy that we have, you know, after the games, that was something special today. That was a real joy to, you know, be a part of, and obviously the way that it ended, you just have to give credit to all these guys. I mean, they fight till the very end.
That's Cole Hamels getting that experience as a Chicago Cub, understanding what Wrigley Field feels like.
And, you know, we get to hang with Cole Hamels on the 27th. You can too, by the way. It's the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern Tour. It continues Monday, August 27th. Cole Hamels, Brandon Kinsler, and Jesse Chavez are all going to be our guests, or will be theirs, really, at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern on Monday, August 27th.
Or be there. And you
That's
want those
absolutely
tickets.
Absolutely less.
670thescore.com/ondeck. 670thescore.com/ondeck. You want to make sure that you are there to join us. And we're going to be back at Gallagher Way on Wednesday already.
That's right. We return.
So we were just there, and we're going to be back there, and that's going to be awesome.
You think David Bodie's going to want to come on the show again?
Sure. So Len Casper once described Wrigley Field, for better or for worse, positively, negatively, as an amplifier of emotion.
Huh.
Everything feels bigger, more meaningful in Wrigley Field. There's something about that building, and I've never really tried harder to explain it. Anybody who's been there and watched games has experienced that before. And you felt it last night, but another time that you really felt it, I thought, and for me, it was coming through the radio in my car on 670 The Score, when I was sitting and listening to Pat Hughes call the sixth inning of Friday's game one.
Friday's game, okay.
And the Anthony Rizzo 13-pitch walk. Mm. It was remarkable. What was going on with Jeremy Hellickson, what was going on with Rizzo, the psychology of that moment and what it did. The guy had a no-hitter. He was taken out of the game before he'd given up a hit. And that's because this battle of wills between Rizzo, all choked up with his BHAC, trying to cover the fastball, knowing that the go-to pitch was the change. Cubs down 2-0. And just working, trying to survive a plate appearance. There was so much to it. And then just especially the radio call. And you could hear in the mix, you could hear all of the tension at Wrigley Field and everything that was going on. But you may say that no single plate appearance can change the course of a series, can really have that much of an overall effect. That one, for whatever reason, felt like it did. It felt like it did in that game. You had, and we mentioned it on Friday, knowing you had Scherzer Sunday night.
Yeah, that's right.
That you had the increased significance of the other game, saying if you're going to get one early. You got to get one early, get one when you can.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that old, you know, late 90s, early 2000s baseball. Like, get into the bullpen early. Get into that soft underbelly of a team.
Back when they had soft underbellies in a bullpen.
Them, right. You know, guys who weren't coming out, tossing flame, breathing fire. It did feel that way. And I thought, too, I remember when this happened at the time, when the Nationals made the pitching change, when they took Hellickson out. I appreciated that, and maybe it was just the circumstance of, like, how many pitches he had and that he'd walked, that he'd gotten the bases loaded and all that stuff. But there was no worry about, oh, he's going to take him out in the middle of a no-hitter. Oh, he's going to do the, you can't do this. It had to be done. There was, choices were made, decisions were had. Like, that was it. That was over. And I guess maybe it was the circumstance. Maybe it was because that pitch count was so high and things had looked the way they did that it made the decision that much easier. But we're not, you know, sitting here wringing hands about that.
But just this idea of knowing when we always talk about, do you know if you're in somebody's head? This is the major league level in a packed ballpark, yeah. And the guy's just cruising along, and they're not getting good swings. They're not getting it squared up, and then something just changes. Something gets weird, and you know that there's the fans start to feel it a little bit, and they start to project maybe we're having an effect on what's going on. You know, it's like what Tiger Woods said when he came off the course yesterday. He was talking about, and did you hear it throughout the day, the amount, the support that he was getting?
Yeah.
The amount, even just little off-mic stuff, let's go, Tiger, go get him, Tiger, you got this, Tiger, come on. And he, in a rare moment for him where he seemed real, sometimes, you know, those post-round interviews and he just sort of sniffles and mutters and leaves, it really sounded genuine from him about how actively positive and supportive the fans were of him.
So that's what I started thinking about after that round, after Brooks Koepka actually won the thing and is becoming one of the more, you know, standout golfers.
So boring.
He is boring, but golf is anything but.
When you stripe every drive 335 right down the middle of every fairway, what's that you're supposed to do?
It's unfair. And the moment he showed, what was it, on 16, where for a moment he faltered and looked like he might give a shot back. You're going, oh, God, three-way playoff, come on through. And then you realize, no, it's Brooks Koepka, and the guy has ice water running through his veins.
He should have won it by five. If you look at the number of birdie putts he missed, he should have absolutely walked away.
Absolutely could have. And I think he's a very interesting, because this isn't the first time we've had Koepka win and Tiger be a storyline down the back stretch and making headlines on a Sunday, because, I mean, it's tough for him to not make headlines on a Sunday if he's out there. But I think as much as Tiger fed off some of that in St. Louis, as much as he really did seem genuine about it, I think the fact that Koepka was walking around without a damn soul with him while winning that tournament, I think he feeds off that. I think he sees that kind of, you know, just stares into the maw and lives off of it. I think he seems to be that kind of guy. Walks around with a chip like that. And a deserved one. You know, I mean, it's not this manufactured bulletin board stuff. It's not the, you know, A-Rod came down from the mountain and delivered his sermon and we disagree.
Right.
It's not this, no one believes in us but us, men, when you're talking to the number one ranked in the preseason Alabama Crimson Tide football team and running the table.
It's also not like Patrick Reed where, look, I'm a jerk and nobody likes me, and if I could play with earbuds in, I would.
Who do you play with on tour? Patrick? No one.
No one.
No one puts up with me.
Right.
No, it's very different than that, because I think a lot of guys like Brooks Koepka and have enjoyed playing with him. His playing partner is...
Well, Dustin Johnson's his best buddy,
yeah,
right?
Dustin
they always
Johnson.
Get the house together.
And so I think he's a well-liked guy who also gets to walk around with this deserved chip, you know, that you've been slighted. And it's tough to do anything but if you're covering that event with Tiger in it like that. Because we've seen what he does.
The 847. God, the texts are just... Is Dan suggesting that a plate appearance could cause momentum? Interesting how he picks and chooses when he believes in that. All right, chill out. There are situations...
It changed the game.
In games where plate appearances change the way human beings react. My issue has always been with the concept, again, of... game-to-game momentum
right.
in baseball. That's where I will take issue. And some believe that exists. You know, Theo Epstein believes there's some truth to the game-to-game psychology. I think that that's really not true because it all depends on that next day's starting pitcher, as John Lester proved. It doesn't really matter because if that guy's good, it's good. If that guy's bad, it's bad. But, of course, in a game, a given pitcher, a given player can be affected by the things that happen in that game.
Yeah.
And sometimes pitchers lose the strike zone. It has nothing to do with momentum. It has to do with sometimes pitchers lose the zone a little bit because somebody got in their head.
We got Joe Maddon and Jim Deshaies scheduled to join the show a little bit later on this morning. And we can ask them, too, because whether it's Rizzo changing the tenor of that inning with a walk or not, people always tell you that as a guy's about to get on a heater, you watch for him taking his walks.
Accepting right? his walks,
you, you
yes.
You always hear that from hitters. When you start getting that eye up at the plate. And I don't, you know, maybe that walk's a little bit different because I think you saw Rizzo, you know, he, like you said, he choked up on that thing. He was looking to be a spoiler up there a little bit more than he was looking to be aggressive for a lot of those pitches just by nature of what he was getting. That said, you know, he turned it on there. He turned that plate discipline thing on. He knew that needed to be an at-bat where he wore somebody out. Maybe that's him getting on a little bit of a heater, maybe accepting his walks and feeling that eye a little bit, getting more comfortable up there is a portend of things to come. Maybe not. I don't know. Certainly a pretty remarkable series for the Cubs, though, being able to turn that one around, shrug off something on Saturday, and then come back against a Max Scherzer start on Sunday.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. Bernstein and McKnight. We are on 9-1 middays on the score. Tom in Lake Zurich, you're on Sports Radio 670. What's happening?
Hey, fellas, just a quick point. You're talking about Tiger Woods and Koepka. Koepka's like watching paint dry, but that's a different discussion for a different time. My point is, in the old days, people heard footsteps. I watch a lot of golf. My perception of Woods is that he would have won that tournament 10 years ago, not just by the fact that he shot 64, but somebody else would have heard the footsteps, choked for 2, 3, 4 strokes, and just threw in the towel, and all of a sudden it's over, and how did he do that? This generation doesn't seem to feel the footsteps.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're 100% right that intimidation factor of here he comes, here it comes, doesn't rattle these guys the same way it used to because they're Tiger created these guys.
Tom, let me ask you a question. You say you watch a lot of golf, right?
Yeah, I do.
Tom, just out of pure curiosity, I'm not coming at just. I just wonder. Do you mean that Brooks Koepka is boring to listen to talk, or do you also think that because of the way he plays, he's just a little bit boring to watch? Just curious.
All the above.
Really?
Like,
that's interesting.
He's robotic.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson is a little like that to a degree,
little.
Right?
Can't putt,
you know,
yeah.
I guess if you liked anything about Woods in the old days was he showed emotion, right? These guys they're so good. It's insane how good they are. And then, you know, the physical side of it, right? Their workout routines are just mind-boggling, right? They're not like old-school golfers who smoke a pack. John Daly, right? He smoked a pack of Marlboros in one round and was 50 pounds overweight. Just a different breed.
No, the field, the average golfer. If you look at we loved the 70s, and we loved when it was Nicklaus and Weisskopf and Trevino and some of these guys, and every week, you know, the same guys, because you didn't have the same quality of the field. You didn't have, you know, every year the SEC is giving you, you know, three more guys that could win any tournament. It just the right now, every time you step out there, you know, some guys are hot, some guys are playing really well, but the internationalization of the game, the idea that every time they line up, it's completely reasonable that one of 100 guys could win a tournament. You say, oh, of course, that guy, sure.
Yeah. That's interesting the way Tom looks. Appreciate the phone call, Tom. I think it's an interesting way of pointing that out. I get that Brooks Koepka is a boring interview, sure. I find each one of his tee shots to be must-watch on Saturdays and Sundays. And I don't, maybe they are for you too, but you just kind of, for Tom or for you, Dan, or for anybody watching the game, I don't know. But there's a certain expected measure of what's going to happen here. Oh, look, it's Brooks. He's going to hit it 330 down the center's cut. Like, okay, great. I find that fun. I'm not saying you have to, but you pair that against Tiger not hitting a damn fairway on the front nine, and just the it wasn't a scramble. It was more than scrambling to make shots. It was more than that because he was scoring after putting those things anywhere, after spraying it God knows where off the tee, that because of the way he set himself for that, for the second half on Sunday, it was could not tear your eyes away golf.
We're broadcasting live from Joe Madden's third annual Try Not to Suck golf outing here at Bryn Mawr Country Club in Lincolnwood. And joining us next, right after an update, Gary Matthews and Pete LeCocq.
Yeah.
That's coming up on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.